the ideas that we have in our head aren't always translated in what's inside the data store, inside the database like that. And so we need a little bit of that connection there, and because often it's just implicit or it's understood, or it could be, right, these meanings could be changing. You know, what revenue is something that a company can change its definition of. Is it over the last quarter? Is it over the last year? Like that. So like remembering like those things come into play, because yes, you could have your data analysis agent go off and do an analysis, but it could be very different than what your actual humans would do, because they have a different definitions of what's going on.
You're tuned in to the Data Masters podcast. In each episode, we dissect the complexities of data management and discuss the data strategies that fuel innovation, growth, and efficiency. We speak with industry leaders who share how their modern approaches to data management help their organizations succeed. Let's dive straight into today's episode with Anthony Dayton.
Welcome back to the Data Masters podcast. If you've been tracking the explosive growth of AI coding agents, you're going to love today's episode. Joining us is Rajiv Shah, an agentic AI engineer currently on the founding go-to-market team at OpenHands, the leading open source platform for cloud coding agents. Rajiv's path to AI is fascinating. He started out in the military, where he earned the nickname the Why Guy for his relentless curiosity, which led him to a PhD and almost two decades of teaching data science and a career driving adoption of some of the biggest names in the data space, including Hugging Face, Snowflake, and Conceptual AI. Rajiv thrives in that messy 0-1 phase of product building. He's passionate about outcome engineering and helping teams bridge the gap between complex technical tools and actual business value. So, Rajiv, great to have you on the show. Welcome.
Excited to be here.
Awesome. So you recently joined OpenHands, and I think it's even fair to say OpenHands recently was launched. And as part of that founding, you have sort of noted this shift from local coding agents, local coding assistants, to what you call the outer loop. And I think a lot of people listening are quite familiar with standard AI copilots that they run in their IDE. So in your view, what is this outer loop? What are you doing at OpenHands, and why do you think it's a big deal?
So it's an exciting time in the AI. And I think part of the reason I went to OpenHands is just what we've seen in AI, where a couple of years ago, coding agents were, if you remember, tab complete. They just do a tiny bit of a little bit. But what we've seen is, especially in just even the last 3 or 4 months, these coding agents' capabilities have just dramatically improved, where now they can put together a plan and do a series of tasks, and they can do this autonomously. So what this means is now we just don't have to use coding agents in that tab complete where I always have to babysit it, only let it do one or two things at a time, because otherwise it can go off the rails. But now I can really kind of step back and just let it go for, could be 5 minutes, could be a half hour, could be 30 hours, could be 30 days, and just let it code away towards some task. And this ability to work autonomously now kind of creates lots more possibilities for use cases, whether it's in coding, but it could be in data and other areas. But now I can set up jobs that can run automatically, whether I want to scan my repos and look for vulnerabilities and automatically generate fixes. Or perhaps I have like legacy Spark code that's sitting around that I want to modernize and upgrade. I can have a background agent go out and test and see, hey, which of those repos should I upgrade to a newer version of Spark and automatically run tests, calculate like what is the efficiency gained by moving my code to do that. So this is that outer loop, is this ability to kind of do all these autonomous tasks that I'm really excited about.
So this feels and sounds very similar to something many people have probably heard of. Many people may have, in fact, installed and used this tool, OpenClaw. And I think it's fair to say there's been a sense of viral usage of it. Many people call it a privacy nightmare because you sort of give it unrestricted access to your machine. There have been some fun blog posts of people writing that it's, you know, done horrible things like deleted all of their documents or whatever. And I'm confident, talking to enterprise companies, that, you know, they would shudder to think people installing OpenClaw and setting it loose on God forbid, their source code or even their data. So talk to me a little bit about what you're thinking about here at OpenHands versus OpenClaw.
Yeah, and it reminds me of that phrase, right? With great power comes great responsibility, right? Sure. Like now that these coding agents are capable of doing so many tasks where I can integrate them with many tools that I might have. So I can integrate them with my Zoom, my Salesforce, I can connect them to my Snowflake and have them all seamlessly work and move data by itself back and forth from all these things. It can go through my emails, through my text messages. And so that opens, especially for enterprises, a whole host of like security issues, privacy issues, governance issues. If all of a sudden you have these agents that are making their own decisions to access data, right? Using some user's permission to go in and get that data and be able to do things. And we've seen nightmare scenarios. We've seen scenarios where companies have had their entire data, including backups, deleted because the agent thought, well, you know what? I want to start fresh. This has gotten a little bit messy. We need to clean up and start over like that. So there is a huge downside to like trusting these agents to kind of have access to all the data, to have permissions, to be able to do all kinds of commands. And this is where, especially at the enterprise level, where there is a governance label layer coming in, there's sandboxes, there's controls around that to kind of harness this capability, but still not put ourselves too far at risk like that.
So as a practical matter, how do you implement some of this? Because I think one of the things that people like about these autonomous agents is they do have their permissions. They are able to do work. It's a little bit like giving an intern access to your email or letting them borrow your credentials. Maybe not a perfect analogy, but you know, it certainly has the sense of, and I think what people like about it is the sense of multiplication. It's like me, but five of me. And that's exciting.
Yeah, no, and obviously it's going to be a tension here because, right, like we all want to get things done. And if we can use these agents to get things done, but on the other hand, right, like are you as an individual going to download huge amounts of data and then move it to another system where an agent might kind of do that kind of in a way? So yes, we want to use your permissions. We want to make life easier for you. But we still want to have some type of governance and controls over that to make sure that they're not moving around data that they're not supposed to, that they're not doing actions that they shouldn't be doing, kind of downloading commands or running unauthorized software like that. Because maybe for the agent, it could be a shortcut because they don't understand all the context, all the rules that you might have in place as an enterprise. But absolutely, it's going to be a tension. We see it nowadays with tools like Claude Cowork and Claude Code that are really based on a laptop user working entirely on their laptop versus, right, many enterprises don't want to risk that much going on laptops. They prefer things in a sandbox, in a place that they can control and kind of know where the compute is being done. But yeah, that's going to be a source of tension as we go forward.
That's a really interesting point. So, and something I hadn't thought about until you said that. There's a sense that a lot of these agents come from your local PC context, and whether it's obviously a Mac or a PC, but like from your local machine's context. And that's, I suspect, because that's how developers tend to work. So developers tend to work on typically a very powerful PC. And I suppose it also maps nicely to this trend of people. I think the new hot thing to do is buy a Mac Mini, install OpenClaw on it, and let it loose. But again, it goes back to this idea that the core construct is my local machine, which is a kind of local version of me. Are you doing something different with OpenHands that sort of breaks that paradigm?
Yeah, so I think that there's always going to be this tension, and we've seen it in IT between kind of the centralization and decentralization like that. So I think, you know, with OpenHands, we've spent a lot of time working on coding agents for several years. And one of the things we came in early on is that coding agents need a sandbox. They need a protected environment to work in. We don't want them running loose kind of on laptops like that. So that's always been part of kind of the architecture of OpenHands is to use kind of secure sandboxes where we have network controls, for example, over that. So we know what that data is coming in and out is and have that isolated environment to run that. Because it's not only useful for security, but it's also useful for scaling, for compute, for lots of other pieces, because maybe you don't have the fanciest MacBook laptop, but you need a lot of compute for your coding job, right? Having it in a container sitting in the cloud can give you a lot more flexibility as well.
Got it. So yeah, so that's a really interesting idea. So it's like, not only, it's not that I have a access to my local machine, I may actually have access to more compute and more capabilities because I don't have to actually manage it.
Absolutely. And for a lot of the coding tasks, and you can think of this even for data tasks, it's not just one or two streams of data that I want to work with. I might be working across an entire enterprise where I want to do 100, 1,000 different things at the same time. So that's going to be way too much for one laptop to be able to do themselves. So I think that's the difference between that personal use versus a lot of the enterprise use cases, which just take a lot more resources to do.
Got it. And so I suppose that helps this idea. I mean, I think one challenge people have had with coding agents is it does demand a fairly beefy PC, hence my Mac Mini comment. But that just wouldn't be a good idea in the enterprise. You wouldn't want to turn that on for everybody. But in this context, it might make a ton of sense. I'm also curious, you've been a big proponent of open source, and this is an open source project. Talk a little bit about how does that fit into the strategy? Is that unrelated to it?
Yeah, and I'll give a little bit of history. I'm an old person like this. I mean, part of how I started out in data science was because of open source. When I first got into things like statistics, you had to go and spend $1,000 to go get SPSS from IBM if you wanted to run some social stats on there, right? It was open source that kind of cracked open the world of data science and AI, made that widely available to folks. So I've always, in my heart, I've always loved that approach where they've kind of been there. And I've also seen it from the enterprise. I remember the days when open source was not looked upon inside of an enterprise favorably, where there was real concerns about security around that. And now we've seen enterprises flip-flop, where I talk to lots of companies that really have an open source philosophy first because they want to know that I have the ability to transparently look at the code to make sure there's no issues, to be able to fix things ourselves if there's a problem like that. And so there's a real benefit from that. And so I've seen that in working with enterprises, which is kind of one of the reasons I wanted to choose, again, an open source company. I spent many years at Hugging Face because I just know enterprises nowadays really like that piece. I think the other piece when it comes to looking at AI is being agnostic to the type of model choice. I know everybody has favorites with like things like Anthropic and OpenAI, but I've seen this over many years, right? The model providers come and change, right? What's fashionable today is not going to be fashionable a year from now. And so just realizing that you don't need to tie yourself into one, that really a lot of times we magnify the differences heavily between these model providers, where for 90, 95% of the tasks, you wouldn't know which model is running for that. And so having a solution that's agnostic, so enterprises have the flexibility to choose kind of what fits them best for that particular job, is always something I thought was very valuable.
Got it. So yeah, it feels like the open source choice is also about trust. If I'm trusting this thing to run autonomous workloads, especially if it's being run on the cloud, then having a sense for what the actual system is doing, being able to evaluate that is an important core component.
Yeah. I mean, and it's become so much easier nowadays because now we have all these great coding agents. So now when somebody hands you some code, whether it's when it's open source, you can point your coding agents to it and quickly understand exactly how it works. What are the interfaces? How would I modify this? How could I change kind of this, where, traditional software was much more opaque. You can't do that sort of, you don't have that ability anymore to do that sort of work.
Experience Tamer's proven data-centric AI, engineered to speed the discovery, enrichment, and maintenance of the golden records businesses need to accelerate growth. Tamer's expertise in quickly and accurately unifying large amounts of data across disparate sources gets results faster at a lower cost compared to traditional master data management or DIY solutions. Stop wasting time on bad data. Visit www.tamer.com, that's TAMR.com, to see results now.
So shifting a little bit into thinking about the value that users get out of these coding agents, and particularly thinking about it in the context of data projects, I know you've spent a lot of energy thinking about how to help companies and people take advantage of these technologies and actually get business value out the back, as opposed to, just yet another AI project that didn't quite go the way people expected. So maybe talk a little bit about, and I think you call it outcome engineering, so not to over-engineer the outcome, but like, so how do you think about helping people get value out of these tools, and especially in the context of data projects?
Yeah. I think there's one element of how we use these tools like that, but I think one of the things I'd also like to focus on here is the larger piece of how we make these tools work inside of an enterprise. And I'll tell you, I'm the first one guilty of this, is I will put out on social media shiny demos of, hey, look, people, look at what I built, like that. And I remember working inside of enterprises, right? Like, I'd show up on Monday morning, right? Like, we had some weekend project. We'd show the boss, like, hey, look what we did. We integrated these pieces together to do that. And, right, it becomes very easy to kind of set up and create those types of demos. But to really create value inside an enterprise, you have to go much more beyond that demo. And that's where, you know, you can't get stuck, whether it's a pilot project or something like that. And you have to think about, like, in an enterprise, there's a lot of people that are working there. Whatever you build, yes, you're the power user, it works for you, but like, you got to make it work across everybody, right? Like, it's got to be able to fit into their workflows. You have to have the change management, the education, and the incentives for some people who want to learn a new workflow, right? You need to have this plugged in so where what you built is actually valuable to the business in terms of what the business cares about. Right? You want your leadership bought in, right? You want a VP on your project so that way your project can move forward. And so when we talk about value, I think that's an important piece, is like how you actually get that cool piece of technology that you did all the way so it's valuable inside of an enterprise.
Okay, so but to talk about that, because I think a lot of people will have had the experience of being able to do much more because they have an AI assistant or a coding agent helping them in, you know, hacking something together, for lack of a better term. It's no longer, maybe it's, that's actually a bad way of saying it, because it's no longer hacking things together. Like, you can actually write production code, and you don't actually have to understand, even in a surface way, what the code is doing. You can achieve fairly sophisticated outcomes without a real understanding of the details of the code. And so this idea that the weekend project can become a production application, we're much closer to that today than maybe we've ever been. So
I think we're closer to that on the technical software engineering part. I think as a process for getting that inside of enterprises and connecting the training and all of those pieces and leadership, we're not. And if we look at kind of the engineering side, this is something that's really changed a lot over the last year, where 6 months ago, if somebody kind of showed up on a weekend, like, hey, I built this, you know, using the latest AI models. As a software engineer, you might kind of shrug, like, yes, it kind of works, but right, like, you definitely have concerns about the reliability of the code and all the edge issues and how it would break. Now, it's obvious in the last 6 months that people haven't stayed up to date, the quality of the code is much closer to kind of what you'd expect for your developers. So if you're working in where the most of the distribution of code is, like the popular languages, doing popular applications, and you're where these coding agents really know how to work well, absolutely, they can develop that kind of production level quality code. Now, there's still, right, like, I think software engineers might quibble in terms of how production engineer and how reliable it is, and right, the coding best practices and stuff, but we can all agree that it's much closer now to what it is. But I think this is where I think the trap is yes, you built the code, but to actually create value inside an enterprise, you need much more than that code to actually kind of change the business processes and to create value inside there.
Got it. Okay. I think that's fair. I suppose it's an open question as to at what point we expect the coding agents to also help drive business adoption. They're sending emails and asking people to contribute. And, you know, and I suppose we see a bit of this, you know, asking an agent to write the documentation for the code you've written, which is, you know, the typical thing that you see a weekend project do, is like actually go through and write the documentation or the, you know, user adoption manual or the, you know, use case report. Like, are these, or I mean, even in the PowerPoint presentation describing it, you know, these are things that we could imagine doing today.
Absolutely. Right. And again, like, I think we have to think through what are the implications of this. I think we've moved to a point now where these coding agents are so good for writing documentation, so good for writing PowerPoint, so good for writing the emails, that the human side of us, right, can get kind of overwhelmed or annoyed by how much content that is coming through like that. Like some of that content is obviously for the agents themselves to help understand what to do. And this is where like I still think like thinking about the value inside the business organization is still kind of important for how it moves ahead, kind of what you're trying to do. Was it right? Sell more widgets, lower costs, that piece like that.
But wouldn't you say, I think we've mixed up two ideas. Writing code for the purpose of building an application, maybe let's just grant you that for a second.
Yep.
For data projects, you know, the bar is probably lower. Like if I'm writing a bunch of Python code to, you know, marry two different data sets and come up with some insight about, you know, our gross margins or something.
Yep.
Like for one thing, it may not need to be production code. It may be necessary just to answer the question. And secondarily, the ability to also ask a coding agent to run a statistical test, interpret the results, you know, and then write it up in a way that, you know, an executive kind of understand. That's probably a pretty easy task for agents these days.
It's a really interesting terrain around data analysis, because the coding agents definitely have the ability to manipulate data, the tools, the statistical knowledge to do these tasks. But kind of where the rubber hits the road, though, as often is the data isn't pristine, right? Like there's still a lot of interpretations. You have 8 different versions of the date column there. And so you still, right, there's still that human partnership that has to come into play to help explain how the data is arranged and, right, how do we actually calculate revenue or subscribers like that? Because some of that stuff might not be documented, might not be down like that. So absolutely, it's going to accelerate that analysis, that back end piece of it. But, you know, in the companies I see, it's still pretty messy in terms of how their data is, their business objectives, where there's still a heavy human element to figure out and kind of squeeze out all of this value like that.
Well, that's a great point. And I think maybe to play it back to you, it might be fair to say that if everybody had their data perfectly organized and linked together, and there was used to be this dream in the, I don't know if it's the 80s or 90s, that, you know, the end game here was that everybody would have all their data in SAP. Like if we had achieved that dream, again, we're dating ourselves, but you know, if we'd achieved that dream, then maybe we would be in a place today where we could just sort of say, look, you know, run the margin analysis and go. But your point is that there's still a very big missing piece, which is this contextual layer for the data that brings it together, organizes it, cleans it, et cetera. Is that fair? I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Absolutely. And it's just, right, that contextual or semantic layer, because, right, the ideas that we have in our head aren't always translated in what's inside the data store, inside the database like that. And so we need a little bit of that connection there, and because often it's just implicit or it's understood, or it could be, right, these meanings could be changing. You know, what revenue is something that a company can change its definition of. Is it over the last quarter? Is it over the last year? Like that. So like remembering like those things come into play, because yes, you could have your data analysis agent go off and do an analysis, but it could be very different than what your actual humans would do, because they have a different definitions of what's going on.
Yeah, that's right. And also, the interpretation of what the meaning of, you know, a customer or a customer who churns or a customer upsells, those things, those are maybe have good generic definitions, but have very different meanings in your business.
And you know, this is the same revolution we're seeing in coding, in data science like that, is these agents now are really good at harnessing these tools, but we still kind of need a little bit of human oversight, especially the messier the area, to help kind of guide them into what makes sense to work on, what doesn't make sense to work on like that.
Got it. So casting your eye forward, and it does feel like this world is changing faster and faster, and it's sort of almost hard to keep up. So, asking for a 5-year prediction is almost certainly useless. And so I'm hesitating on like what time frame to suggest, but you know, thinking 6 to 12 months out or something fairly reasonable, I would hope, for, you know, what do you see shifting and changing? What do you expect people will be doing differently in the medium term?
Yeah. So I think like thinking back, like why AI agents are so good at, for example, software and math is because they're very deterministic tasks. There's a kind of a right or wrong answer for that. With coding, there's lots of checks in place where you can check part of the way through. Am I on the right track? Am I not on the right track? We have tools like compilers. So there's a whole...
They can compile, they can type check.
Yeah. So like it becomes, because of that, it was a really an area that we were able to rapidly advance where now the coding agents, right, are as good as the best humans or, right, better than 99% of the coders kind of out there like that. And so now the question is what are the next areas? And I think like looking at how coding agents have been successful in kind of these kind of verifiable tasks where there's kind of a clear right, wrong answer, there's tools to be able to identify, are you on the right track or not, are going to be the ones that are going to be most upended. I think the other pieces we see is the rise of skills,
right?
Being able to give codify specific instructions to agents to do tasks like that. I think more and more, we're going to like pull that out of humans to do that. So these agents will be able to do more and more. But I mean, the growth of these agents has been amazing over the last 2 years. And I really don't see any reason that these models are not going to slow down in their kind of abilities and capabilities. Now, how widely that's going to affect, you know, every profession. But right now, I think anything that works in the digital domain, right, where you're working with bits and bytes and all of that stuff can be manipulated and read by a computer like that. I mean, these agents are going to be working on all that stuff. Like, it's amazing in terms of how much they're doing in images, whether they're creating images, right, whether it's data analysis, writing legal briefs like that. So, I mean, I really think this is going to be a substantial, you know, change like that. Now, as humans, right, we've had technological change before, right? Like we can adapt to it. Sometimes we overthink the impact in the short term. But over the long term, right, this is going to be a revolutionary impact as these models can harness so much more of the digital information and manipulate it much better and quicker than humans can like that. So it's going to have some long-lasting effects like that.
Yeah, I mean, maybe to say a positive spin on that, there have been a lot of challenges in the enterprise. We talked about one around, you know, cleaning, contextualizing your data that maybe were unsolvable until we have access to these kinds of technologies. Certainly, it's been the case that we will see more software written in the next 6 to 12 months than we saw written probably in the last 6 to 12 years, if that pace increases. Is that a fair... maybe a positive framing?
Yeah, and I don't mean to be negative. I mean, I think there is going to be a dramatic impact, like that we're not exactly sure what it's going to do, right? Like the history of technology has shown, right, it's made life better for kind of all the humans like that. There's going to be some impacts like that. But I mean, I think it's an exciting time to be in where these machines are being able to free us from a lot of the other tasks that we can do and kind of work on higher order pieces like that. So I think it's an exciting area to be in, and it's going to, yes, have some big changes like that.
Awesome. Well, Rajiv, a pleasure. Thank you. And thank you for sharing these insights. I think there's a lot here for people to take away and hopefully use and make practical in their day-to-day.
Thank you for having me. This has been fun.
Thanks for joining us for the latest episode of the Data Masters Podcast. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on today's show. And if you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you never miss an episode.